I herniated my back the night before.
Oh.
Yeah. That was an interesting race.
Did you get through it?
I woke up in the morning and put my wetsuit on and figured I'd just do the swim because I couldn't walk. I could barely stand.
Wow.
Got through the swim and I said, maybe I'll get on my bike and just ride as long as I can. And by mile 90, I was in agony. I couldn't get down to my bars. I had to stay up the whole time.
Oh.
So I finally resigned to getting off the bike and sitting on the side of the road. And I started thinking about my training partner who I was with. I was going to drive home for 10 hours, who would finish. And then I had to go home and tell my kids I didn't make it. And then a guy rode by me with one arm. And I said, get up, get up. And I got back on the bike and I hobbled through the marathon and finished it.
Wow.
But it was a 14-hour race that day.
Welcome to The Greg Bennett Show. I'm your host, Greg Bennett. And this was a very special episode for me, chatting with my longtime friend and somebody that saved my career more than once and even helped my performances go above and beyond, with my dear friend, Dr. Alex Keith. This one was great because it was in person. We were able to sit and chat and really reminisce about some great stories we went through. And Alex shares his journey into the world of triathlon and, finally sort of working with some of the greatest triathletes in the world and going to the 2008 and 2012 Olympic Games and what that meant to him. And then his journey into the entertainment industry and becoming Jimmy Buffett's right-hand man and a bodywork specialist to him and his band over many, many, many years. And some really great stories in this one and a lot of fun for me to have Alex finally on the show. It took some time, 4.5 years actually. So it's great to have him on. And I think you'll get a lot of great tips in this one as well about body maintenance and everything else to make sure you can stay away from those injuries or if you're injured, how to sort of overcome them as well. So a lot of great takeaways in this one. Little bit of housekeeping before we go on. I want you to all know about these Fireside Fridays. These have been life-changing for me personally. I think I've done about 30 of them now. I've met so many of you. You're amazing. All of you are on epic journeys, have so many great stories. I love the social part of getting to know you all more intimately than me sort of being on one side and not actually engaging. So I'm getting a lot out of these. So if you want to come on and have a chat, I offer up time on Fridays. DM me on Instagram. I'll also say I'd encourage you to also open up your Fridays and do Fireside Friday chats. You never know who you're going to impact. And it also, it's very good and healthy for you to socialize and do that as well. Maybe even just start with your friends, but open up a bit of time on a Friday. It really has been life-changing. It's been really fantastic for me to connect with you all. So give it a go. And one final piece, if you are enjoying this show, I would love you to give me a review and, 5 stars is always nice if you're willing, and share it. There's a lot of great takeaways in these shows for people to learn from really, really epic special guests that know a hell of a lot. I think this show is definitely worth sharing. So share it to your peers, to your family, and help grow this show. I hope you enjoy Dr. Alex Keith as much as I did. And remember, success comes to those who endure just one moment longer. All right. Today's guest is a world-renowned bodywork specialist and chiropractor whose hands have worked wonders on some of the greatest athletes in the world. From helping Olympians reach their peak performance to touring with music legends, his expertise and passion have made him an integral part of many elite professional careers, including my own and Laura's. From Olympic gold medalists like Emma Frodeno, previously Snow Seal, to rock stars like Jimmy Buffett, his influence spans across sports and entertainment, making him a true legend in the world of chiropractic and beyond. This episode, well, it's long overdue. This man saved my career more than once and enhanced my performance so incredibly much. It's unbelievable. I'm going to talk him up so much more on this show, but this man saved my career and honestly some of my performances from 05 to 2012 were all because of this man keeping my body going. And more than that, he's a great friend and a man that went above and beyond to help me excel. So without further ado, welcome and thanks for joining me in person on The Greg Bennett Show, Dr. Alex Keith. How are you, mate?
I'm doing great. Great to be here. I think we should end it right there.
We're all good. Mate, well, listen, it's like I said, it's been way too long.
It's amazing that you've moved into my town.
I know.
And then we stopped seeing you.
I know. But it's like here you are sitting in my studio, and it really is a special. You said this morning you were filming something. What were you up to this morning?
No, I was shooting. I was in a competition.
Oh, you were shooting? See, I heard it when you texted me this morning, I'm shooting this morning. I was like, shooting a film.
No, literally, we were shooting long distance.
Oh, were you doing archery or guns?
This was rifle.
Rifles? Mm-hmm. How was it?
It was excellent.
Yeah.
It's about a 200-yard course. You get about 30 shots, and you're under literally under the gun with some excellent shooters surrounding you.
I didn't mention that in the introduction. You're my survival guy. If all the world breaks loose, I'm driving straight to your house. You're not a prepper.
That would be wise.
But you are well equipped to deal with the apocalypse. Yeah. I got to remember. Do you remember when we, back in 07, and I had that race in Dallas. I had to win. Remember, I'd run the four races.
Yes, and you were hurt.
I was hurt.
Previous to that.
Yeah. And I came down here and you said, Greg, just come down to Florida. Let me work on you on the lunch breaks. And even better than that, you took me to the shooting range. And I was so nervous. I'd never shot a gun. I was nervous. I'm an Australian. We don't have guns.
I didn't even think about that.
It was one of the, you know what it was?
You did great.
I remember sweating so much, I thought I was going to drop my hands with dropping. But I remember leaving that, and it was almost shooting something so powerful, having these cannons in your hand. It was kind of like, wow. I don't know. It was almost like the release I had from the pressure and the tension I'd been holding, you know, from having to win this performance, and I was so scared. And you coming along as a mate and say, hey, let's just go do something totally random. And this was like 2 weeks before the biggest race of my life, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it was so awesome. Do you remember that?
I do. And I remember your father-in-law bringing the biggest pistol.
You remember that? Yes. My father-in-law, I think what did he have? Like a Colt 45 or Colt 44, whatever it was, a bazooka in his
44
hand.
44 Magnum with a 10-inch barrel on it.
You know? And he blew his shoulder off. Remember that? Yeah, so anyway, we could spend the whole episode talking about going to the range and shooting guns, which, you know, we even went and got our licenses together at one point.
Yes,
there.
We did.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. But, mate, what I want to do today is talk about how your journey into the world of triathlon a little bit and your experiences of racing and putting on events, but then working with Laura and I, USA Triathlon, and eventually Jimmy Buffett. So there's a lot to go through here. I want to be cognizant of your time, and I do have a wedding I have to go to this afternoon. So we'll go through this, but we could talk for hours. But tell me, let's rewind the clock. And tell me, how did you sort of first find triathlon and Ironman?
Purely by mistake. I opened up a practice of chiropractic in Lake Worth, Florida, and had about 20 patients, and some of my patients were the local triathlon team. Mm. And the president, Tim Mahoney at the time, had to leave towns going through a divorce. And he said in one of the meetings, I need someone to stand up and take control of the club. And all I thought was 1,700 mailing lists. I'll take it.
Business opportunity.
And that's how it started.
Oh, I love that.
and it came with running a triathlon, which I had never done. I had to do a quick study.
That was Loggerhead, right?
That was Loggerhead. Yeah,
it's a big one down
race has been on. Mm. It's the oldest race in Florida.
Wow.
And it was on for about 5 years, seeing about 135 people that year coming to the race. And within, we did it for 24 years, but we were selling out 800 6 weeks before the race for years.
Wow. That's so awesome.
It's a local championship for some of the athletes in the area.
My brother-in-law, I think he missed, this is no word of a lie, he missed Laura's race in London Olympic Games where he had his ticket paid for. He missed the race so he could race Loggerhead and turned up the day after in London. That's how big it is down here.
That's it. We have a lot of triathletes in the area, a lot of great ones.
Yeah. And so that got you into it, yeah?
Yeah, that got me into it. And then I started to build the club.
Yeah.
So I figured we should have two or three practices a week. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I went to the USA Triathlon Station at Colorado Springs and went through the training as a USAT coach, levels 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And started building the club slowly but surely. And then one day, Laura, who was a local legend in the area, was hurt and couldn't race, so they came down to my office, and I was working on her, and that's why you guys were there.
Yeah.
But you were here for 10 or 12 weeks, and you had already stopped racing at that point.
Yeah, yeah, that was after the 04 Olympics, I think.
Yeah.
We that's when we first met you, and I remember for us after 04 Olympics, where I'd been fourth, but Laura had missed the Olympics, and Laura and I sitting down going, we've got to do things better. We've got to be more intentional. We need a really great team, and we wanted somebody. We reached out to Laura's brother, John, and we said, look, we want somebody who could do ART, you know, active release therapy at that time. And he said, oh, you know, I know this guy, Dr. Alex Keith, you know, and we went down there and immediately you did more than treat us. You educated us. And so that for Laura and I, so when we went with you, we would, you know, be able to work on each other a little bit and probably dangerous to some degree, but we weren't manipulating. But although we did have you quite a few times on Zoom, didn't we? We were like, how do we manipulate?
Many times you guys would show up on Zoom looking like Bengal tigers.
That's right, with all the Graston. So everybody that doesn't know what Graston is, basically scraping, scraping the fascia, and Laura and I. Still to this day, we take off our wedding rings and we scrape where we need it. But that was awesome, mate. That was 04, so 20 years ago.
Had to teach you how to treat yourselves on the road.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was a while back. But then you also started racing yourself, right?
I did. I started to build the club bigger and bigger, and I figured if you're going to be part of this, you better be doing it. And it got carried away as triathletes do. I think we did like 40 sprint triathlons our first year, and then we got into the Olympics and the halves, and four or five Ironmans followed.
Yeah. But they all, which ones were they? You did Florida Ironman? I know you did that one.
I did Florida 4 times.
Yeah.
I did Arizona once, and I did Lake Placid once.
I see all the big American ones. Mm. Any inclination to go back and do some more?
I actually had a thought of doing it 2 years ago for my 60th birthday.
Yeah.
I went out for a run and I ran back home and said, no.
It's so funny, isn't it? It's like, cause people are like, Greg, especially at the gym, it's like you go to the gym and they're like, Greg, you know, do you still think you can run a 5-minute mile? I'm like, what? I said, no, I haven't run for 8 years. I said, I'd be lucky to break 7-minute miles. It's like, it's a long time ago. When was the last one you did? When was the last time?
2012. That was my last
time. Oh, that's not long ago. Yeah. And that was when you were...
I herniated my back the night before.
Oh.
Yeah. That was an interesting race.
Did you get through it?
I woke up in the morning and put my wetsuit on and figured I'd just do the swim because I couldn't walk. I could barely stand.
Wow.
Got through the swim and I said, maybe I'll get on my bike and just ride as long as I can. And by mile 90, I was in agony. I couldn't get down on my bars. I had to stay up the whole time.
Oh.
So I finally resigned to getting off the bike and sitting on the side of the road. And I started thinking about my training partner who I was with. I was going to drive home for 10 hours, who would finish. And then I had to go home and tell my kids I didn't make it. And then a guy rode by me with one arm. And I said, get up. And I got back on the bike and I hobbled through the marathon and finished it.
Wow.
But it was a 14-hour race that day.
But you did it. It's like amazing that we were talking before the show how perspective can slap you in the face every now and then. You can get down on yourself and go, hang on, things are bad, but they could be worse, right?
Well, that's what Ironman teaches you, because you will fail. For me, I'm a total amateur, but I love the sport.
Yeah.
And my body will quit 2 times during that race, and you have to just wait it out.
Yeah.
And it will go away, and you'll come back, and you just keep going.
Isn't it funny? My mindset, when I only did the 2 right at the end of my career as well. And it was always, no, I'm going to finish, because pulling out just means you're going and sitting back in your hotel room. So that's not an option, sitting in your hotel room feeling down about yourself. So just keep moving forward. And none of them were pretty. Nothing I did in Iron Man was pretty. Actually, nothing I did in sport was that pretty. Remember you called me the bumblebee?
You are the bumblebee.
You could never figure out how I did what I did. And so, I think Laura's brother David even said when we were swimming once, he said it was like watching a rhino swim quite well, but he said it's like the rhino and the swan.
You pulled it off.
Yeah. So whatever I had going for me worked. Gosh, yeah. It's a great sport, and like you said, you learn a lot about yourself in those darker moments in a long Ironman event.
Well, that Dallas race you were talking about earlier, you were hurting. You had foot issues, you had back issues, and you pushed through it, and you won. You won all five of those races.
That was a big one. There was two standout moments when I think about working with you. The first was in 2006, when I'd been in Australia and I hadn't been able to run. I had such a pinched nerve going down my back. Like if I took one step running, it was like agony. And I went, you know, I was working with the physios down there. Like, oh, you got arthritic hips and you got this and this and you're done. You're done. And I kept trying and trying for months. And finally, I think by April, I flew back to see you. And it was like I worked with you every day. I don't even remember. I just hung out at your office and whenever you had a break. And finally, I remember running down that street right behind your office and being able to run 20 meters and the joy, you know, and people listening to this have had injuries know what it's like when you suddenly feel like you can run 20 meters without pain. And then it was 50 meters. And then, you know, I kept stretching and moving and having you work with me. And finally, 12 weeks later, I was winning New York City Triathlon, which was a highlight because that was the first race of, I think, about an 18 race streak where I won 15 of the 18 and the other three were podiums. But it was because we got me back on track.
Quite the comeback.
It really was. It was like from career, it really, 06, I was out. That was when I was done for sure. And it's a big thank you on that one.
Oh, my
pleasure. Yeah. That's the reason we're sitting in this house.
That's part of my career, right?
Right. And then it was. And then fast forward to 07, I'd won the four races already. We went to Beijing. You were now working with the USA Triathlon team, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But went over, wanted to watch Laura qualify, which she did in flying fashion. She came third and qualified for the 08 Olympics. And I think I had a decent party that night. Anyway, came back home dehydrated on the plane. I had about 5 weeks until the final race in Dallas and pulled up lame. And that was when, as we talked about earlier, when I flew down and you got me going. And then I'll never forget when you came out to Dallas and I think you were sharing the room with us.
We were sharing the room.
And so it was Laura and I and you. Laura wasn't racing. You call your good friend, Camille Reagan, who awesome person, human being,
chiropractor,
and she's in Dallas, Texas. So anybody out there, you need to look her up and figure out how you can get in and work with her. But you called her up and I never forget, it was 2 a.m. And you guys had the tables out 2 a.m. in the morning because the race start was at whatever, 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And you guys working on my body from 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. I went down, jumped on the bus with all the other athletes to go down. And this was to win it was a biggest prize purse in the sport. I don't need to go into the details, but it was a big deal for me. And I went down and anyway, long story short, won that race and so special. And I find out later that you and Laura, after working on my body all morning and I went off to do the biggest race of my life, you guys hopped back in bed and watched Princess Bride.
We did.
Didn't bother coming down and watch me race.
Separate beds.
Separate. I don't know. That's what you say now. I want to talk about, hang on.
And then she hits me up with, hey, you want to go for a 3-mile run? I was like, yeah, I want to go for a 3-mile run with Laura Bennett.
No.
No, but I did.
But I just thought it was so hilarious. Yeah, it was one of those things where I knew you guys were behind me. I knew that you'd done your work, like you guys, you'd given me your best. Laura had got me ready, she was quite good at getting me back to even keel. And then you kind of just said, okay, job done. He knows what he's doing. You didn't need to be down the start list. It was job done. And that was really cool. And then seeing you guys at the finish, that was a real highlight.
Yeah, that was a great day.
Yeah, mate. I'm telling you, there's some good memories. I want to talk about that then next. You got very involved with USA Triathlon, largely through Laura.
I did.
And made the 08 Olympic team.
Well, they're very strict, the U.S. Olympic team, the Olympic Committee. To get that, you had to go through about 6 more years of education and training.
Wow.
Before they will let you. You have to become a diplomate in sports medicine. It's a very difficult degree to get. And you have to obtain several, 4 or 5 different soft tissue techniques and taping techniques and extremity adjusting techniques before they'll even let you touch one of their athletes. And that's only to be domestic. Wow. And you do that for a year, and then they'll let you go international, which I was able to do with you guys. And I was training for Louisville Ironman that day. And I remember that I had my training partner. We were all ready. We were going next week. And I get a phone call from USAT saying, hey, we want you to come out with this to Hamburg, Germany. And I was, I'm out. I'm in. And I had to call my training partner and said, look, I'm out of the race. I said, I got an opportunity of a lifetime in it. It just took off for there for the next 7 to 8 years.
I remember Laura and I, this is how bad we were. We're so selfish. We're like, we don't want Alex working on the rest of the USA team. Hang on. He's working on Sarah Haskins and Hunter Kemper. We're like, hang on. But it was one of those things. You'd been so good for us that it was like, if we can help expand your career into an area that you want to go. Did. And then you did. You went to, I don't know how many, what were they called? World Triathlon Series or World Cups back then, whatever they were called.
Probably 6 to 8 a year. Yeah.
You did a lot of traveling. All in first class and well looked after, right?
Oh, yeah. Had people carrying my luggage and tables. I remember my first night in Beijing. I'd got there and I was upside down, didn't know where I was, in the auspicious hotel. It was this amazing, authentic hotel. And I thought there were rats in my room because you and your wife are trying to slide a piece of paper under my door telling me, hey, if you're awake, come over.
We need some body work.
It's dark. And I thought it were rats in my room. And I was like in my bed, curled up, scared for an hour.
Yeah.
And then I saw the paper.
And then you get the call up then, you know, you work with USA Triathlon for a couple of years, and then you get the call up and say, hey, we want you in Beijing Olympics on the team.
That was the best.
Yeah.
Moment of my life.
Really?
Moment of my life, yeah. You know, every chiropractor in the world, that's the dream, you know, unless you can get in with a team somewhere. But nothing is like working with Olympic athletes because the glamour is taken out of it. It's just hard work and determination, and everybody's whole livelihoods are depending on every moment in every race. And I can remember working on you guys, and I think the very first time I taped Laura's knee, I may have put the tape too tight on her VMO, and she comes limping over to me, and I'm like, oh, my God, what have I done? So it was simple to fix, but every moment, I mean, everything you did mattered so much to every athlete. You think you're always ready for something until – you know, you're in that moment.
Yeah, it's very intense.
Their occupations are on the line because of what you're doing.
Yeah. It's intense. Who was on that team? Laura, Sarah Haskins, Hunter Kemper for sure.
Julie.
Oh, Julie. That's right. Julie Swell. And then Hunter Kemper, was it Jared? Or was he 2012?
It was the next one. It was...
Maddie Reed.
Maddie Reed.
That's right. Maddie Reed. Alex is showing, going high, pointing to the sky.
Potts?
No.
Andy Potts.
Man.
No, he was 12.
Oh, yeah. And he wasn't even.
He was that. London.
So it was Potts, wasn't it?
Andy Potts, yeah.
It was too. Yeah, it was too. Yeah, that's a good team. That's a really
great
good team.
Yeah. Good coaches.
Good team of people. You had, I can't remember who was their coaches that they had there. They changed coaches last minute. That's right. That was a whole political thing, wasn't it?
There was some controversy that
we had. Cliff English was the head coach. I've had on this show a couple of years ago, and then they rotated in a whole brand new team last minute. Every federation has a story.
above my pay grade to know what was going on. I just went along with it, but it was great.
Yeah.
Great, totally great experience.
And then you worked from 08 to 12 continually then, doing all the World Series races with everybody.
You know, you're always taking a chance. Yeah. You don't know if they're going to pick you.
Yeah.
And you have to dedicate going to every World Cup race.
It's a lot of travel.
And two weeks every year, volunteer.
Oh, really?
One of the facilities. It's a lot. I wasn't making money working.
No.
But the education was priceless.
Yeah.
The experience was priceless.
And it's hard, you know, because you had young boys at the time and going away for weekends and, you know, not just weekends because half of these races take you know, a week to get to, you know.
That is true. The time I spent away.
Yeah.
Almost 22 years of traveling.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. My wife, I love her to death.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we haven't even touched on your trips with Jimmy Buffett yet, which was kind of your next chapter. But, you know, when you got the call up for 2012 Olympics, I think Laura and you probably got called up around about the same time.
Right.
You know, she qualified.
I think Laura had a little pull for that for me, which helped a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think Laura, I think I had many conversations with, you know, with Laura and the high performance team going, no, you want Laura at her best. This is the team she's bringing. It's like, we're not changing. She's not having somebody else work on her body last minute. You know, this is the team. And it was, it's great. It's great that we had that pull a little bit for a little while.
I can remember sitting on that bus with every top triathlete in the world. Yeah. And I'm just this guy looking around going, oh my God, this is a.
But you've ended up working not just the US team. You know, this is, like I mentioned in the intro, I remember having Emma Snowsill and Helen Jenkins on it, you know.
And your buddy with the ribs in Vancouver, remember he subluxated his four ribs.
Who was that? Oh, Vancouver. We're going all the way back to Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's like 05.
I had to sneak that one in.
Yeah, that's right.
That could have ended my career right there.
We can come out with it now.
Sorry, Cliff.
Alex was secretly working on half the pro field. No, just a couple of our good mates. And it was a bit like that. We had to sneak them in a little bit. You know, even I was sneaking in, you know, because I was Australia.
That's right. But
that was also, they were like, okay, no, it's
Greg. That was part of the deal.
It was kind of part of the deal. Yeah. It was like, Greg's allowed to be in here. But yeah, you got to know personally a lot of the world's very, very best triathletes, over time, you know.
And it was for me, when triathlon was booming.
I mean, it was
growing like crazy. And you'd go to a European competition and there'd be 300,000 fans.
Yeah, I remember Hamburg. Nuts, huh? Absolutely nuts.
Buildings were shaking.
Yeah. What did your mates say when you'd come back to Florida here in the local triathlon club? And were they kind of like, whoa, what? Here's a guy that kind of said, nodded to say, okay, I'll take over the club because somebody's got to do it. And you saw it as a business opportunity. And suddenly here you are at the pinnacle of the sport working with the world's greatest athletes. Were people saying anything? Were they...
I don't know. To me, you know, it's such a crazy life. It's just part of life's plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking about that this morning, and some of the toughest times in my life have made the most impact on me and moved me in the right direction. I mean, severe, devastating injury from car accidents, relationship things, Hurricane Andrew, which destroyed my building and took all my everything I owned, and that's the reason I moved up into this area where we are now. And it's one thing after the other, but some of the worst things that at the time I thought were devastating turned out to be the most life-changing things for me ever.
That's really profound. And you know what is really cool about that? It feels like recently this is a topic that's come up on this show. I was talking to, do you know Joe Friel? He wrote the
Triathlon. Sure.
So he was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Triathlon Bible.
Yeah. And so Joe was talking about, you know, how he wanted to be a professional triathlete and got injured and his world was over. And little did he know that it actually, you know, he shifted gear, pivoted and became this world-renowned coach and trainer and Training Peaks and writing dozens of books and everything else. And it's amazing how if you can have this kind of hang in there, endure for one moment longer. That's what the show I say at the start of every episode. Success comes to those who endure one moment longer. If you can hang in there, it's amazing what good can come even of bad times, right?
Yeah. There were times where, like after Hurricane Andrew, I was down in Miami and the business I was working in was wiped out.
Yeah.
The place I was living was wiped out. And I came up here and I went on 14 interviews. I was staying on a buddy's couch and I was going back to New York that day. I said, all right, this is it. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And he said, you got one more interview. Just go down and check it out. I was like, nah. He goes, nah, just go look. And I went down. Here I am 33 years later in that same practice.
I love that. And anybody that's coming down to South Florida, you got to go down to Lake Worth to see Alex Keith, get your body work done. Now working with all the rich and famous off Palm Beach Island. We don't need to mention names, but this guy, he's helping a lot of people maintain their biomechanics and being able to move freely.
They seem to live longer down here.
Yeah.
You got to keep them playing golf and tennis.
Yeah, I know. It's a different... So look, you did this. You did this time with USAT, and we've laughed about it quite often because I said, oh, you know, you flew business class and first class. But what was hilarious is I was always a points person booking, trying to book Laura and I business and the most direct routes and everything else. And we'd get to these destinations and Alex would turn up and say, I'd be like, how'd you get to Japan, Alex? He said, well, I left Palm Beach 3 days ago and went through three or four different airports in economy getting to these places. And you did that for years where you basically just let USAT, and I guess they put you through United all the time, get to where you want. And then you're going to have to tell me about this, but you get a gig with Jimmy Buffett, one of the most famous musicians, definitely in the US, right. But potentially in the world, one of the probably wealthiest musicians in the world. And tell me firstly how that come about, but then I'm also curious as to how your travel changed.
There was a slight upgrade. Jimmy was doing a show in Australia.
Yeah.
At the Opera House.
At the Opera House.
And
Sydney.
He walked off the stage by accident and cracked his head open, hurt himself. So at that time, they decided that maybe they ought to have somebody travel with them in case this ever happens again. And I think he came to Palm Beach just to recover and must have asked 12 people references, and he must have asked 12 of my patients because they all gave him my name. And I was on vacation. He gave me a phone call. I drove back up, worked on him for an hour, and I've been with him for 15 years until he passed in September.
Mate, but that was pretty cool. I mean,
it was unreal.
Yeah.
It was unreal. He was one of the most genuine, intelligent, ambitious. The guy would just look for every moment what he could do to improve not only himself, but everybody around him. Mm. And if you look back at his life, if you're familiar with him, he has 9 best-selling books. He has Broadway plays. He has movies. He's an actor. You know his brand.
Margaritaville. He's got his cruise ship right parked, you know, half a
And this is a guy, he didn't do well in Nashville. So his buddy, Jerry Jeff Williams, who wrote Mr. Bojangles, said, Jimmy, you got to come down to Key West and you got to check out this vibe down there. And he went, and the rest is Margaritaville.
No way. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And anybody who's been to Vegas would know there's Margaritaville Casino. I mean, the guy.
He's got them all over the world.
He really did put his tentacles everywhere, didn't he?
Yeah.
Incredible. And so you found yourself then being his guy.
We would travel to, I think, about 48 shows a year. It was about 8 different tours of about a week to 2 weeks each.
Wow.
And it was always in private jets. We didn't even know what checkout time meant.
Yeah. Saying the Four Seasons and the Ritz-Carltons and the...
And that was when we were slumming. He would find some of the most amazing facilities in the world. I mean, we've spent weeks in Maui doing shows, staying the most beautiful places. And it was, he just took care of everyone around him. If anyone needed anything, you saw his people. He took care of it. Everybody in that band loved each other.
Yeah, you worked with the band a lot. That's the thing. I mean, you say, I've mentioned Jimmy Buffett, but when I've seen you when we were in Denver and you were working with the whole band and you introduced us to everybody, and you know, you were all very cool, and you were there to not just the whole chiropractic kind of mentality is manipulate, see you later and go. It's like, no, you were there as their bodywork specialist and somebody that's going to keep them going.
Well, I was hired for Jimmy.
Yeah.
And to take care of Jimmy and keep him going, but there's a lot of time in a day, and I wasn't going to avoid. Yeah. Well, everybody in that band is over 50 to 70 years old, and they didn't really know much about chiropractic or whatever I did, or did they work out? They were used to going out from 8 to 2 in the morning and then, you know, sleeping late, but we changed all that. We got them all out working. Most of them would got really into going to the gym every day and working out with routines, and it became quite a group. They were going high-level HIIT classes, but Jimmy would show up every morning at 8 o'clock, work out for an hour, hour and a half, go play tennis, have breakfast, and then put on a show. Mm. And this man's in his 70s doing this every day. But it wasn't all glamour. I mean,
no.
I would start working sometimes at 8 a.m. and finish at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And that was like every other day.
Yeah.
Then I worked like a half a day the other day, but you know, you got to keep them going. It's like working on any athlete. Guitar players have arm problems and shoulder and back problems, and drummers, and they all thrived on it. And they became very open to coming in all the time and getting worked on. So I would work on, they would go on stage and do a warm up at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I would work on the crew that was broken.
Yeah.
Then when they come off stage, they would come into me.
All right. So I'd love to see if we could get some advice, for everybody listening. You know, especially as we're aging, when it comes to sort of maintaining body health and biomechanics specifically, mm-hmm. Do you have any advice that people can take with them?
Well, without getting too technical, I think the biggest thing you can focus on is balance. Some of the biggest injuries I've worked on were a repetitive injury that, you know, they were trained inappropriately or they do one thing too much, but the imbalance shows and then impingements start to happen. And so light, soft tissue work, whether you're doing foam rolling, I think the percussion is being overused way too much.
The percussion.
It's just, I'm finding it causing more problem than not.
Is that right? Like, because I was sponsored by, this show had Hyper Ice sponsoring it for a long time, and I've got all those tools,
But it's about maintaining proper flexibility, whether you enjoy yoga, and the only downside to that is you need some pull. There's no push, there's no rowing or back work in yoga as much as there is push into the floor. So there's no, you have to correct that balance with other exercises. And that's, some people use Pilates for that or just get into strength training.
Yeah.
Because any strength training, one of the biggest things you want to avoid is repetition or improper balance. And the one thing that strength training overcomes repetition. So even if you're having a, if a golfer is doing one-sided, if they do straight on equal balanced weight training, you can overcome a lot of those repetitive injuries.
Right.
And to know your limits, to know not to train through an injury.
Oh, please, Alex, you're talking to...
I know, but I mean, to a point.
No, I know what you mean. Point. I know what you mean. It's like knowing, okay, there's a little niggle there.
Sometimes you have to.
Yeah, take a little break. Yeah, but take a break a little bit.
When you can take those B and C races and put them aside, and sometimes rest is more genuine than...
Yeah, no, I get it. I know, I never listened to you. I think you've...
Nobody ever does.
Nobody ever does. No one ever...
That's what my practice is built upon.
Yes, I know you'll be back because I know you're not going to listen. You know, the thing for me I've realized is mobility. Mobility has been, rather than, I don't like the word flexibility almost. I like the word mobility for whatever reason. Again, it's how you need to talk to me because flexibility, right. The mobility is one, especially I've noticed in my 50s that after years and years and years of doing something in a certain way, like you said, you know, my psoas is a very strong psoas, my quadriceps are very strong, my hamstring, my glutes need to be built up a bit more to deal with the overcompensation of the psoas. My lack of mobility in the sense of, you know, everything tends to have locked down after years of doing stuff. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like doing some of the soft tissue work, like you've taught us how to do, whether it be Graston or any of the rollers and that kind of stuff, is good. And then you can work the mobility on top of that.
And one of the key words there is dynamic for stretching and flexibility. It has to be done through movement patterns.
Yeah.
To try to do anything static is not that productive.
Yeah. I heard motion is lotion.
Motion is lotion.
I love that.
And to give yourself time to warm up.
Yeah.
You need, the older you get,
yeah.
I'm 60.
Yeah, I'm 52.
I don't know what you are. You're still 30.
A couple of years behind you.
But you have to give your time to warm up.
Yeah.
So now for my age group, for warming up, I get on a rower for 15 minutes. Yeah. And by the end of that, I can stretch out so much more easily and get things moving. And I have half the trauma to my joints.
Still got to get you in the sauna with me at the club, mate.
You keep asking out loud. I know it's
the best is I see Alex at the same gym, especially when I was doing the early morning workouts, and I'd say, hey, come on guys, I'm heading down the sauna and have an ice bath. You guys are always freaking out on me. I'm not having a bath with you, Greg. I'm like, it's not what you think it is, guys. It's just a sauna and an ice bath.
I haven't gotten to the ice baths yet. No, we're working on that.
No, it's changed your life, mate. It's awesome. But hey, let's do this. Let's move into what I love to ask guests, and so final four questions. So the first one, you know, we can look a long way back now that you're 60. My goodness. What would you tell your 18-year-old self? What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
18-year-old self.
Wouldn't listen?
Boring first, but most sincere is take care of your gums.
Take care of your gums. I love it. Oh, man, after the last 10 to 15 years in dental chairs and having everything done, I appreciate that one.
Your sophomore year in college, do not date Mary Ellen Macbeth.
Check. That's awesome. Now, all 18-year-old Alex Keith is hearing Mary McMillan Macbeth. Right. I've got to find her. I've got to find her to know why I shouldn't. Right. Yeah.
The girl lived on lollipops and potato chips. I should have been a red flag.
That's great.
But I think, more importantly, understand finance, preferred stocks. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're investing at young, even if it's a little bit at your 20s, put $100 a month or $200 a month, and compounding interest
is
going to go a long way.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how none of us got, well, I didn't either. You know, I feel like I've learned that the last 10 to 15 years, but it's like, yeah, we weren't taught anything. I remember, you know, becoming a triathlete and suddenly I'm getting reasonable size checks, or let's say I'm making 60 to 100 grand as a 22-year-old going, what am I doing?
Right.
Right. Nobody said, Greg, oh, there's this little company called Apple. Maybe put a couple hundred bucks into that in 93. Right.
My kids who are 21 and 25 have been investing since they were 16.
Really?
Every month. Wow. And they're doing very well with it.
That's awesome. Isn't that great? See, that's education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good man. That's a great answer, by the way. I think it's one of the best answers I've had for that question. That's really good. The most common answer is my 18-year-old self wouldn't listen to me anyway. So. All right, mate. This is my favorite dinner time conversation. And when you're at a dinner party, if you ever kind of, you know, conversation's gone dull, this is always a good one. But if you could have dinner with any three people, living or dead, who would they be and why? Ideally, not family.
Not family.
Not family. But if it has to be family, that's fine. We can always throw in some. That's okay. I just try to make you think beyond.
Well, I am an avid fan of 16th century Japanese culture of the Edo period. So it would be a dinner with Miyamoto Musashi.
My goodness.
Who is, I would say he was probably best known for inventing the two-sworded style. It's an actual individual who lived until his 70s, who became an artist and a calligrapher, but he is known for his 66 battles to the death and never lost, obviously. And he was the number one sword fighter in the history of Japan.
Wow. What was his name again?
Miyamoto Musashi.
Miyamoto
Great
Musashi.
Great book.
He's got a book out too?
Great book. Yeah, his whole life.
And it's just called that. That's
it's
his
a
name.
Huge culture in Japan.
Yeah, no, I bet. I bet.
And yeah, it's his whole life as a taekwon, his name was Takizo as a kid, and he was a ruffian. And through his lives, he learned to just travel the world, his Japan, and study sword fighting. And that's all he did. And then he got picked up by the leads of government who educated him, and he became their bodyguard. And he was known for fighting some incredible fights, some with multiple combatants up to 12, and he never lost. In fact, halfway through his career, he would never fight with a sword again. He used a wooden sword, so he would give them a chance.
Seriously?
Great guy. Yeah.
Wow. Alex, I love that one. Okay. Who else have we got? That's
actually
really cool.
It would be my father. I know you said no.
No, it's okay. No. I say that, but I also know it's fine to do.
I have five brothers and a sister.
Yeah.
And he was, how shall I say, very demanding father. And we never really clicked until the very end, right before he passed. So I was the youngest of the group. I never really got into long conversations with him. But listening to my older siblings tell about what he used to do and why he was and where he was fascinating to me. And I always regretted the fact that I never had that serious conversation with him.
How old were you when he passed?
I was probably in college when he passed, but I had already gone away. And it was a difficult because he worked. He was one of those guys who he was a master mechanic who ran an International Harvester trucking dealership. And he worked from 5 a.m. till 11 at night. So I didn't see him until he retired. And I happened to be a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like all of a sudden, boom, head to head with a 17 year old.
Yeah.
Didn't work out well. But yeah. And third. So many. I can't think. Yeah.
That's right. Well, let's we'll plate it. We'll come back.
All right.
You can give me a third in a moment. I've got my list. I can always give you a whole bunch because my list changes every day too, by the way. I've got Arnold Schwarzenegger and Elon Musk and some of these people on mine, just throwing names out there for to just digest a little bit. I'd even like to just catch up with Joe Rogan, you know, get on his, I think he's an interesting guy himself with all the conversations he's had. There's plenty there. We'll come back to it.
All right.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
5 years, on to my next pivot and transition of life. I think I will stop working full time. I don't think I'll ever truly fully retire. I love what I do. I see changes in people every day. And so I'll probably work less, but I'll continue what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to be, I'm on the board at Kaiser University here at the chiropractic school. I'd like to teach. So definitely I'll be taking my wife on many trips because she's put up with a lot for the last.
She's had to put up a hell of a lot, mate. Hell of a, Colleen,
she
big
held
shout
down the
out.
Fort while I was traveling.
Yeah.
She did a great job.
All the boys. She all right, mate? You and your two boys, which you got a dynamite family. We love you guys. And she's done incredibly well. You've done incredibly well. And I love that.
Well, she's been working in my office for 28 years running.
Yeah.
Half the show. And fortunately, we've been able to let her go home. And she works one day a week. And the best day of my week last week is I called up and she was potting orchids. I said, perfect.
Yeah.
Makes me twice as happy.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it, buddy. All right. This is not meant to be morbid, this question. It's actually meant to be invigorating. If you had just 6 months to live and they're healthy 6 months, how would you want to use those remaining days?
I would spend every minute of it with everyone in my family, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews. That's it.
Yep.
Wouldn't need to travel. Don't need to see anything else.
Go do some shooting, some archery.
I would qualify for a 2-mile shot. That's the goal in my life. If I go before that, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Hang on. What does that even mean for people that don't understand qualifying for a 2-mile shot?
Well, F-class shooting, you can go for what is called the king of the 2-mile. And you build a rifle and you build your own ammo to fit that rifle. And hopefully you get it to a point where you can shoot something that travels for about 19 seconds and then hits its target.
Wow. That's 3.2 kilometers for people listening outside of the States, 2 miles.
I can do it about 1.2 miles efficiently.
So you build your own.
You have to, you cannot shoot factory ammo. Something that long, it's not accurate enough. And in shooting rifles, like long, considered what people call sniper rifles, you have to, every barrel, you can buy two of the exact same rifles, same steel, same everything, but those barrels will like a different charge, a different amount of powder in them. They'll like a different weight of bullet. They'll like a certain type of case. And you have to kind of do a process of elimination. It's called the load development. To figure out what that gun likes. And when you have it, you can put a hole through a hole.
Wow.
Yeah.
Takes me back. I'm visualizing Mark Wahlberg in the movie The Shooter. Remember the opening scenes there where he's shooting across the canyon?
There was just a recent world record set for 2.4 miles by a Ukrainian who used an American rifle and took out somebody 2.4 miles away.
Wow. That's incredible. And you said it takes 19 seconds?
Anywhere from 19 to 21 seconds.
Wow.
It's a long trial.
Yeah.
And when you think about a bullet like that, after about 800 to 900 yards, it goes through a certain zones, it starts to topple, it spins.
Oh.
So what hits you is spinning, not a projectile. And that's why when you see on those videos, you get back from the army, you see somebody hit with a 50 caliber, it's body parts blowing off because that bullet's not going straight in. It's
yeah, right. Oh my goodness.
But when you get into this, it's addicting. I've taken my entire dining room and turned it into a reloading room. By the grace of my wife.
Well, the last time I was over at your house, your office had become an ammunition.
That's my reloading room.
Yeah, right. Your reloading room, everything about it. Gunpowder everywhere. You got the huge, what is that thing?
Presses,
thank you. Yeah, I'm doing a motion that I look like an idiot, but basically pressing something down, yeah.
It's an expensive, highly intricate assembly line.
Yeah. But are you doing the archery anymore?
Or? I do. I was shooting this morning as well.
Yeah,
I compete all the time.
Yeah.
I have a 20-yard course at my house and a 50-yard course at home at my office.
Yeah.
And in Delray, we have a massive, probably 12-acre facility for shooting.
Wow, that's awesome. It's a lot of fun. But you live on a golf course. Did you ever get into golf?
I'm not good. I think with golf, you have to play more than twice a week or it's frustrating.
Yeah. I'm about twice a decade, so it's really frustrating.
Right. And for me, you know, all my brothers were golfers and they would always set up these 16 person golfing trips and, oh, did you bring your table? I'm the mobile triage unit. They come off and they're, hey, can you look at my shoulder? Yeah. And it's never a rest. So I just put that aside for now.
Yeah. You've got your thing.
I have my thing.
I love it, mate. Well, let's finish up with some rapid fire questions.
Uh-oh.
No, they're fun. Well, some of them are harder, but all right, here we go. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
All right, early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Favorite cheap meal?
Rigatoni bolognese.
Nice. Mountains or beach?
Wow.
Mm.
I'm going to say beach.
Mm, it's a hard one, that one. A book you would gift to a friend?
Blood and Thunder.
What's that about?
It is the story of the Oregon Trail with Kit Carson and Fremont. It is fascinating. It's how they, given a job by the President Polk at the time to make a trail to Oregon, which we've all heard of, but it explains what they went through and how half the people that they took with them died, and they got to the Rockies in September and had to cross them to get to the coast.
Wow.
So they lost most of the people in starvation there. But this guy, Kit Carson, is 5'6", 140 pounds, and is probably the toughest guy in the country at the time. He spoke six languages, all Indian, different Indian languages, because he was a trapper.
Yeah.
And there was a secret mission Polk gave Fremont. He told him when he gets to Oregon that he wants him to take the Virginians and the Tennessean troops, who were like the Navy SEALs at the time, and to go down and take California. And they did. They made it all the way to San Diego before Mexico figured out what was going on, but it was too late. And that was called the Battle of the Bear. That's why the bear is on the flag of California. So when they got down there, the British tried to come in. Polk knew the British would come from the West Coast, and they were able to stop them, and we were able to keep the country. Otherwise, this would have been a...
Interesting.
Speaking a little different.
I got to see if that's on Audible. I listen to books these days.
Yeah,
I'm not a great reader, but I'm rereading a book called Endurance, and it's Ernest Shackleton. U.S. Shackleton, mm-hmm. And in 1915, and they're going down, you know, the South Pole and Antarctica, and really wonderful book, absolutely fantastic. One, if you enjoy that kind of a story, mm-hmm. set, that enduring mindset is really cool. Anyway, where were we? if you weren't a chiropractor, what would you be? Not that you're just a chiropractor. I kind of feel like putting you as a chiropractor on its own is almost not fair enough. But if you weren't you doing you.
In my dreamland?
Yes.
In Alex's dreamland?
Yeah.
I would be a Navy SEAL sniper.
Love it. And you would be. You'd be good at that, actually. Favorite sport to watch other than triathlon and stuff?
Wrestling.
Yeah. You look like a wrestler. You're built like a wrestler, you could be. Yeah.
That's what trains me to be a chiropractor.
Yeah, oh, I bet. Yeah, actually, everybody, the only chiropractor in the world that I feel comfortable putting my head is with Alex with his big hands. It's like,
you know, it's funny. I got a phone call the other day from a guy I went to wrestling camp with for 10 years. Yeah. And every year we went to West Point wrestling camp. And it was very strict. I mean, 3 sessions a day. You were out by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, lights out. Serious as a heart attack.
Yeah.
But we vowed that before we graduated, because in New York you could drink when you were 18, that we were going to sneak out of West Point, get into their little town, and go have a beer at the bar.
Yeah.
And we did. We made it out, got over the wall, got into town, sat down at the table, and we weren't there 2 minutes, and 2 pitchers of beer were put before us. And we were very surprised. We looked at the waitress very soon. She goes, "It's from the table over in the corner," and all our coaches were sitting shaking their head no, like, "You guys are
you're in trouble.
So they made us drink those pitchers of beer in about 3 minutes. They put us in the trunk of the car, brought us back into West Point, and made us run trees with our hand on a tree for about 5 minutes. And I must have thrown up like 10 times. But fortunately, a bunch of guys put garbage pans full of water against their doors during the night and flooded their rooms, so they took the heat the next day.
Really?
Yeah, because we had one more day of triple sessions. We thought we were in trouble, but now that we're adults, we realize that they didn't want anyone to know that we got out because it would have jeopardized the program.
Yeah.
So it was a whole different reason for not getting picked on. But
that's awesome.
He just called me out of the blue like a week ago.
Yeah. What a great story. I love it. All right. Most used app on your iPhone or phone?
Most used app on my iPhone.
You don't even use it, do you?
No.
Text.
It's Amazon.
You know? I don't know Amazon. You're not really a phone gadget guy.
No, I am not.
All right. Biggest pet peeve?
My biggest pet peeve is anyone who parks in a handicapped spot.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even like it. You know, at the Lifetime Gym, and they have all the family, you can park, you know, and it says don't park here unless you've got kids or whatever. And I always, before kids, I was like, oh, that's silly, whatever. And then now you see these mums struggling with little babies and another kid trying to get out. And so it's not my biggest pet peeve, but it does piss me off when people park in these spots, and handicap for sure is a massive one. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Absolutely.
Greatest movie of all time.
Greatest movie of all time. Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, I've been playing the soundtrack to the kids. They're 4 and 6. I'm like, you can watch the little bit of running, but not when they get to well, wasn't that a great movie?
Great movie.
Oh my God. It's it's actually one I want to rewatch. You know, it's because listen to the music recently.
And The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Good movies, mate. All right, we'll do a movie night. All right. What's something that you're really bad at?
Well, that's a really hard one.
Can't answer that. There is no answer. Nope.
Something I'm bad at. Music. I can't play.
You tried hard for a while.
Jimmy gave me a beautiful guitar. Oh. And I tried. And I don't know if it's my memory because I'm 60 and I learned the 2 songs. I learned them well, but a month later I couldn't remember any of it. Yeah. I just have no musical talent whatsoever.
Oh. You know, it's one of those things. All I've ever wanted to be is like Bono.
Right.
Right. The amount of dreams as a kid, just like standing on stage, singing, belting out a tune. And I never pursued it, but it's always like, but I did pursue practicing the guitar when I was a kid, but never, you know, you just see people's kind of, I'm not saying things don't take work, but it didn't matter how hard I worked. I couldn't play a guitar. I just, yeah.
And I had professional musicians trying to teach me.
Isn't that the best?
I broke them all down.
Isn't that the best? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure if we put a gun to your head and say, get going, years and years, we could probably do it. But
by the way, I have a beautiful Martin HD 28 for sale.
All right. Anybody listening? I assume that's a guitar.
It's a beautiful guitar. And it's sitting in its box in the corner. It's breaking my heart.
Oh, man. All right. We're going to finish up here in a sec. But what's one Netflix show you think everybody should watch? So you have a favorite?
I don't know about Netflix, but the best one I've seen lately is called The Offer.
The Offer?
Yeah, it's The Making of the Godfather.
Oh.
It is fantastic.
Is it? Okay. I love it.
It's only one series, 10 shows, and it's over, and you're heartbroken at the end.
There's a lot of those kind of shows right now.
Fantastic.
Did you watch the Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I haven't
Netflix
seen it.
Netflix documentary?
No.
Oh, it's really great. You'd love it. The guy's amazing on that one. How about Peaky Blinders? Did you like Peaky Blinders?
Loved it. Yeah. Loved it.
Peaky Blinders.
I hear the new Steve Martin documentary is incredible.
Is that good too? Yeah. Oh, man, this is a list. Everybody says Beckham is really good. I haven't seen Beckham. Yeah. Even people that are not into soccer just say Beckham's really cool. Football for people in the UK. All right, mate. Well, one word to describe your experience on the Greg Bennett Show. One word to describe what this has been like for you right now.
It was excellent.
All right. Thanks,
a great
buddy.
Time.
Thanks, buddy. All right, mate. Well, this has been really awesome. It really has been cool to just sit and chat.
We have not had this much time together in a long time.
I know. Right. We keep trying to get together and you texted me and you say, and I'm like, why don't we record a show and hang out? Just make it happen. You know, it's been really cool. Actually, quite a lot about you I didn't even know.
Uh-oh.
I didn't know that you got in triathlon because they needed somebody to run.
That was it.
And it was a business
marketing
opportunity. That is really cool. I love it. Well, mate, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate
it.
It
has been my pleasure, Greg.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, you can find all the show notes, timestamps, and everything else at BennettEndurance.com/media. All right. Cheers.